Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome once again to Symmetry of Soul, a virtual study group for students of the Urantia book and all who are interested in the teachings of the Fifth Epochal Revelation. I'm Ann Garner, and I'm here with my three co-hosts, Dr. Chris Haverson, James Woodward, and Kermit Anderson. As always, it's such a pleasure and a blessing to be with you guys. Hi, Chris.
Well, thank you, Ann. And hello, James and Kermit, and welcome, everyone. Settle in for the show.
Hey, James.
Hi, Ann, Kermit, Chris. What a pleasure and blessing. Well, what a nice thing to say. And I receive that and send it back to the three of you and to all of our friends out there in listener land and chat room land.
Hey, Kermit, and as our good other SOS team member, Zabriel, will say in the chat room sometimes, I put your seatbelts on, here we go.
Here we go. It's a privilege. It's a privilege to be here tonight with my friends and all of those in the chat room and listening in, and to present the review here. Reflecting back on the previous two sections of our reading, we noted the emphasis given in each to the idea of wisdom, spiritual wisdom in paper 19, and the phrase human wisdom must evolve in paper 101. Thus evoking a philosophic perspective. It was reiterated that there is a significant difference between this revelation and the previous epical revelations. Those previous to the fifth were focused on the initiating element of religion. The cosmologies associated with those religious revelations were destined to be outgrown in a short time. But the fifth epical revelation is taking on the fullness of philosophy, not just religion. It must be approached evolutionarily as adults of God rather than children of God. The revelators are expecting more of us. Rather than simply believing, this revelation challenges the devotee to engage it, to ascend the levels of meaning to the fullness of cosmic consciousness. Remembering that if revelation is to upstep evolutionary religion, the teachings portrayed must not be too far removed from the thought and reactions of the age in which they are presented. Today, and pointing out the foreword, some readers question whether the authors duly followed this principle, in that the material presented in the foreword appears to be well beyond the understanding of so many. It was pointed out that at the time of the revelation was being compiled, the first third of the last century, the pinnacle of evolutionary science, philosophy, and religion was indeed not far removed from the concepts in the foreword. Unfortunately, evolutionary progress in these domains has undergone a decline over the past century such that the once small step from evolutionary thought to revealed truth has become a greater stretch today. We begin a new series, the Urantia book, Thought Made Word. Moving from the why and what, we now begin to look at the who and how of the revelation. The first of the major players to be considered in the process of downloading the revelation and putting it into a book are the United Midwares of Urantia. A Symmetry of Soul four-part series entitled Ancient and Permanent Citizens of Our World was presented in November 2011, covering paper 77 in its entirety. And you can reconnect with that archive on our symmetryofsoul.org website, where all of our shows are listed. The United Midwares, consisting of 9,881 of the primary variety and 1,111 of the secondary type, are organized for service with the planetary seraphim in accordance with their innate endowments and acquired skills. We reviewed in paper 77, section 8, the nature of the primary and secondary midwares. Both primary and secondary midwares are very close to material mortals. This nearness of biological and mindal nature is an important factor in effecting the transmission and translation of the revelation from the celestial authors and agents to the material realm. Mindily, the two types of midwares are similar to humans, with the secondary midwares being much closer to humans than the primary. The secondary are differentiated along the lines of maleness and femaleness. They share access to the adjutant mind, being encircled with the sixth and seventh adjutants, wisdom and worship. Also endowed with Marantia mind, these secondary midwares are able to engage the human soul and consequently to the indwelling thought adjuster. The midwares' work with the planetary seraphim falls into four groups. Midway messengers. Individuals in this group have names and are of great value in the situations where personal communication is needed. The planetary sentinels. As the permanent citizens of this world, they patrol the invisible spirit realm of the planet, performing manifold duties for numerous supernatural beings of the realm. This group goes a long way to compensate for our world's loss of the agencies and personnel of the planetary administrations of the planetary prince and Adam and Eve. Contact personalities. Midwares are always employed when contact with mortal beings of the material worlds is necessary, such as the transmission of this revelation. The mechanism of such transactions is hinted at in the description of the activities of the rebel midwares in Paper 77, Section 7, Paragraph 5. Under normal circumstances, post-Pentecost, a midware is prevented from penetrating the mind of a material mortal by the spirit ministries of the Spirit of Truth and the thought adjusters, acting in the manner of force fields of protection. This explains why so-called spirit possession, a phenomenon encountered by Jesus, can no longer occur. For it is when the adjuster is, in effect, detached from the personality during sleep that a secondary midware can contact the minds of the human contact personalities. We would expect to find these midware contact personalities assisting the master seraphim in their associated activities with the mortals composing the various reserve corps of destiny. The last group is the progress helpers, consisting of the more spiritual of the midwares. They assist the various orders of seraphim functioning on the planet. Again, due to the toll on the superhuman staff of planetary assignment caused by the Lucifer rebellion and the Adamic default, these midwares are called upon to pick up the slack and serve in their stead. We commented on the ad hoc nature of our current superhuman planetary administration, which requires considerable creative adaptation by all who serve here, as they are called upon to assist personnel not usually encountered on a normal planet, such as a Verondadec Most High Observer and the resident Governors General representing the 4 and 20 counselors. The loyal 1,111 secondary midwares are engaged in important missions on Earth. Being decidedly material, they are able to make physical contact with material things. They can make themselves visible to mortals and can contact material things while remaining invisible to mortals, as evinced by their work in rolling away the stone to Jesus' tomb on resurrection morning. We are told that many of the more literal phenomena ascribed to angels have been performed by secondary midwares. However, interestingly, the archangel author of Paper 77 tells us that it was indeed an actual angel of the Lord who opened the prison doors to release some of the early gospel teachers, while it was a midware who delivered Peter from prison. This interesting tidbit of history reminds us of the other unrevealed order of angels described in Paper 13, Section 1 as follows. You can almost comprehend such near orders of existence, and it would be akin to betrayal of trust to present even our partial knowledge of such phenomena. The chief work of these secondary midwares, as mentioned, is as unperceived personal liaison associates of the mortals constituting the planetary reserve corps of destiny. They are further exonerated from any implication in the phenomena of spiritualism and mediumship. We are told further that they do not ordinarily permit humans to witness their sometimes necessary physical activities, which of course means that in extraordinary circumstances, humans have witnessed their physical activities. Thus, the possibility exists that the secondary midwares, or the unrevealed angels, could be responsible for some of the unusual and strange happenings that have been recorded throughout our history. Finally, we can thank the midwares for bringing about the mysterious coordination of personalities and circumstances which induced their supervisors to initiate the petitions that resulted in this revelation. And now I'm going to turn the program over to Chris, who's going to give us a little introduction into tonight's show.
Kermit, first of all, that was excellent. But before, just to technically, you sound a little louder than the other two. I just wonder if...
How's this? I'm turning down my volume a little bit. Is that any better? Okay. Very good.
It sounded fine on my end, but
he sounded excited. Is that what you said?
I just said maybe he's very excited.
Volume-wise, it sounded fine over here from my standpoint, but so it's okay.
Yeah, I was just listening when y'all first when we were first doing the saying hello. So it's good. Take it away, Chris.
Yeah, you know, it occurred to me just as you were wrapping up that great review, Kermit, that when we read that last paragraph last week about how the whole process of the fifth epochal revelation got started with the midwares, we should probably mention, you know, to stress that a lot of longtime readers have a tendency to think that it's just part four that the midwares, you know, were behind the, you know, the initiation of. But, you know, see right here, paper 77, which is not just speaking about part four. It is the midwares who are behind starting the whole process of getting the revelation going. You know, even more fundamentally, the secondary midwares. So it really started down at the bottom of the whole celestial hierarchy of beings. If you go any further down, you're dealing with a human. You know, the secondary midway is sort of the first notch up from us. So it's as close to being, you know, as close to having humans requesting it as possible, which is important. The midwares being secondary midwares being very close to us, you know, really know us very well, very intimately, and knew that we needed this, so they became our advocates.
A great illustration of the principle of ask and ye shall receive.
Yeah, and like I mentioned last broadcast, those who asked were quite stunned, I'm sure, when they experienced what they received, a revelation that goes beyond anything anyone could have imagined would be sanctioned by the Ancients of Days. And so...
Hallelujah for that.
Oh, yep. I concur. Hallelujah. Wanted to do one little thing here to transition from talking about the midwares, who were definitely one of the key elements, as we were just stressing, in bringing the fifth epochal revelation into existence. So we transition this broadcast to talking about thought adjusters, in terms of the immediacy of their role in bringing the fifth epochal revelation into existence, that I would step through a paragraph that will serve as a little intro to this, this basic role of how the adjusters fit in. So if you're looking in a single column, a book, go to the bottom of page 1190, which is paper 108, section 4, paragraph 4. I'm just going to slowly unpack, a little chunk at a time, that paragraph, and see how really kind of embedded within this paragraph are all the basic elements of why adjusters are involved and a bit about how they're involved. Okay, so 108.4.4, bottom of page 1190. When a world is isolated by rebellion, when a planet is cut off from all outside and circuited communication, as was Urantia after the Caligasti upheaval, aside from personal messengers, there remains but one possibility of direct interplanetary or universe communication, and that is through the liaison of the adjusters of the spheres. Okay, so like they even said directly there, it's about the beginning. This is the state of our world. We have been definitively cut off from outside and circuited communication. So there was no straightforward way, than sort of the normal means of having, say, revelators being on some architectural world on high, on Salvington or Uversa or some such world, and from there connecting into the broadcast circuits, linking their effort to author a particular paper down through the circuit hierarchy, getting it to Urantia, where it could be engaged by the secondary midwayers and eventually put into human hands. So that definitely was the normal mode of communication, was not an option. And when you see that next statement there about, okay, aside from personal messengers, there remains but one possibility of direct interplanetary or universe communication. In getting us the revelation, they avoided the whole issue of needing any sort of interplanetary communication by having all the revelators, including those that are hailing from Uversa, 200,000 light years away, having all the revelators come to our world. So they were all here on the planet. So that that took out that whole complication of having to have some special means of getting it across space. But that other statement, what do they mean by, say, interplanetary or universe communication? It's not immediately apparent, but that's very key to why an adjuster had to be involved. They mean, by universe communication, they mean just the general fact that the communication system in the universe of universes allows beings high and low to all be linked together. There are certainly a lot of beings that can engage each other directly. But there are also beings who differ so greatly in their vertical relationship, as it were, in the hierarchy of beings, that a very high being cannot directly contact a very low being. Now, for instance, a very high being contacting a secondary midwayer. So that element, they need to get around that handicap, that they don't have the normal downstepping or upstepping mechanism within the communication system to link high beings to low beings and vice versa. So they're going to use an adjuster that's has an amazing fact that they often refer to as the mystery of mysteries, embodied in an adjuster engaging a human, is a bridging of that vertical differential. So when they say, and it is through the liaison of the adjusters of the spheres. By liaison, they mean the liaison of an adjuster within the mind of a human. The liaison is being between that they're speaking of there is between an adjuster and a human mind, not between other between two adjusters or an adjuster and another being or something like that per se. The specifically the liaison, they're going to use that downstepping phenomenon that is just part of that liaison of the mystery of mysteries that's within a human who has an adjuster. Okay, so then when they go on there, no matter what happens on a world or in a universe, the adjusters are never directly concerned. Okay, so even with the isolation, it doesn't somehow hinder any of this action. The adjusters and all of their phenomena go on unchanged in the midst of circuits being cut off. That's not the case for, say, using beings who have relationship to the reflectivity mechanism. Those beings can't do what they normally do if they're on our world because the circuits are cut off. They utilize the circuits as part of getting linked into the reflectivity mechanism. So even that very high fact of reflectivity is affected by the fact that we're cut off, but not anything with the adjusters. So everything is all there, the full functionality of an adjuster liaison in a human mind is available to be utilized. Okay, and then they say, the isolation of a planet in no way affects the adjusters and their ability to communicate with any part of the local universe, super universe, or the central universe. And this is the reason why contacts with the supreme and the self-acting adjusters of the reserve core of destiny are so frequently made on quarantined worlds. Okay, so like I said, in general, we're not needing interplanetary communication, but they're just reminding you that nothing about the adjuster's connectivity is affected. But that last part, okay, so specifically, we're not just talking about an adjuster in mindal liaison with any old human. We're talking about a reservist, a member of the Reserve Corps of Destiny, and we'll be talking about them in greater detail in future broadcasts. Those reservists all have what are known as self-acting adjusters. That means an adjuster who has a lot more liberty of functionality, basically because the human mind that it's in liaison with is not down in the initial depths of its animal origin nature, which basically imprisons the adjuster down in that sort of recess, that cavity, that depression of lowly mind. That mind gets up to a little bit higher level, it liberates the adjuster, takes those shackles off, and they can act in a much more independent fashion. And then they're mentioning that that it's not there's a possibility that adjuster for a reservist might be just an advanced adjuster rather than a supreme adjuster. They're saying that they needed one with a supreme adjuster. The reason for that is as you go from a virgin to an advanced to a supreme adjuster, you not only have an adjuster that has more experience and could be all the more effective in some special situation like we're speaking of here, but also that adjuster is coming down. Think of that adjuster as coming down from infinity, and by the time it reaches the level of a supreme adjuster, you know, which you initially might think of as going up in experiential nature, but it's coming down to in closeness to finite affairs. So if a midwayer is going to make contact with this adjuster, that midwayer has a shorter distance to reach up to get to a supreme adjuster than it would to reach up to an advanced. It probably can't reach up that high. So the adjuster has to be down as low as possible, so that the within the mind, so that the midwayer, secondary midwayer, can reach up and engage. So that's why supreme. They're mentioning there are so frequently made on quarantine worlds. It's not just for the sake of how it was needed for the fifth epical revelation that they do this. This is used any time because it's the only means of circumventing, as they're about to say, when you have a quarantined world. So let me just read that next sentence. Recourse is had to such a technique as a means of circumventing the handicaps of planetary isolation. And like I said, because it's used in general, a lot of times, you know, they're going to be very definitively using this as an interplanetary communication. For the sake of this, since all the revelators were actually here, they needed just that other part. They needed that ability to get a high being connected down to a secondary midwayer. And even though it's not immediately apparent, that last sentence of that paragraph is actually alluding to that. When it says, in recent years, the Archangel's circuit has functioned on Urantia, but that means of communication is largely limited to the transactions of the Archangel core itself. Okay, so just an initial factual point of reference, there has been a communication circuit linking the outside universe to us directly ever since the dispensational resurrection on the day of Jesus' resurrection. That's when the archangel circuit first functioned. And so there's literally this circuit that connects, but it was not used for getting the fifth epical revelation eventually into human hands. Why not? Well, the key is literally has to be finally in the hands of a secondary midwayer. And a secondary midwayer cannot directly engage an archangel or their circuit. It's too high for a secondary midwayer to connect with. And this is where I want to transition to one other little passage. If you go to paper 44 in the intro, in the preface to paper 44, which is on page 498, what we're looking for, it's paragraph 9 in that preface of paper 44, or if you have one of the more recent editions where items in a numbered list within a paragraph are numbered as separate paragraphs, it would then be section 16, because if you look in the preface there to paper 44, there's a list of seven items in the fifth paragraph. So we're after that. It's the paragraph that starts with, I cannot. Now, who's I? The paper 44 is written by an archangel. So the archangel author is saying, I cannot, with exclusive spirit vision, perceive the building in which this narrative is being translated and recorded. And when they tell you about archangels, earlier in the revelation from paper 44, specifically in paper 37, they tell you that the archangels are the highest spirit beings in the local universe that are created in large numbers. I mean, you obviously have beings like Gabriel, the bright morning star, etc. But in terms of large beings who are created in large numbers, the archangels are the highest spirit being. And apparently, from what is being said right here, they are too high for a secondary midwayer to directly engage. Because notice what he says about this particular paper, paper 44. He says this narrative, paper 44, is needing to be translated and recorded. Okay, the secondary midwayer is recording. What's the translation about? That's that downstepping. So in other words, in order to get from the archangel to the secondary midwayer, they had to use the adjuster contact, you know, the adjuster liaison in the contact personality. He next says, the archangel says, a divine counselor from Uversa who chances to stand by my side perceives still less of these purely material creations. And it goes on to give some more about, you know, about those issues. But just at this point, we need to recognize that this need for this downstepping, this translation from a high mind down to the much lower mind of a secondary midwayer, is only needed for some of the revelators. I mean, start with paper or start with part four, for instance. Okay, part four is literally composed by the secondary midwayers. So there's no, the contact personality is not involved in part four at all. There's no one to go from to a secondary midwayer. So the contact personality doesn't have anything immediately to do with getting part four into existence. Nor do they need the contact personality for most of the other revelators. Like the archangel mentioned here, if you're talking about a divine counselor or a perfecter of wisdom or a universal sensor, you know, those types of beings composed many of the papers in part one. Okay, you're going to need the contact personality to link that being down to a secondary midwayer. But if you're talking about a mighty messenger or one high in authority or one without name and number who are former mortals, you know, that ascended all the way to paradise and got embraced by the Paradise Trinity and took on those three different roles. Those beings have a very high nature that can engage very high things, but they also have the low nature embedded within them that they were born with on a mortal world. They can directly engage a secondary midwayer and give them their paper. So they don't need the contact personality. You don't need it for all the lower spirit beings of seraphim and brilliant evening stars, Melchizedeks, Verondedeks, life carriers, etc. All those lower beings don't need the contact personality for. They can directly just engage a secondary midwayer and give them, dictate the paper to them, and the secondary midwayer can write it down. Record it, you know, as the archangel just said here. So, the beings that needed this contact personality and the adjuster liaison, you know, are basically five different types: the divine counselors, the universal sensors, and the perfectors of wisdom, the archangels, and the solitary messenger that wrote the adjuster papers. And we're going to read from the adjuster papers tonight, and you'll see when we get to the end of our reading that there's a direct reference to this fact that the contact with personality was involved in that paper, because it's a solitary messenger that can't directly engage a secondary midwayer.
It was a powerful explanation there, Chris, the way you put all that together. And if people listening to that can really glean a deep understanding of how this revelation got here. And it's, I know for me, when I first heard this us discuss, I forgot when it was, several years ago, but before that, I had all this other stuff in my head because of, from reading that and reading this, and this just so makes sense. It is it's that reality response that I consistently get there.
Yeah, and
because all the other, it didn't make sense to me, so I kept trying to figure it out, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you can even notice last week when we were reading from paper 77, which was written by an archangel, when they mentioned contact personality, so that type of secondary midwayer, notice that they referred to the fact that that paper, they needed to use the contact personality, the human, the adjuster liaison, to get that paper because it's an archangel indicting that paper. So they referred to, you know, these the subject through whom these communications were transmitted. You know,
mm-hmm.
That paper, see, it's one of those that needed that quote unquote translating technique, that downstepping technique. And so now you see, you can appreciate all the more why didn't they use the archangel circuit? It isn't just because the archangels are kind of prickly and people sort of just, you know, let them do their own thing. those beings and their circuit are too high for a secondary midwayer to reach. And you got to remember, these circuits are literally mindal circuits. You know, in order for this to end up, you know, in the consciousness and coming out of the hand of a secondary midwayer and being recorded, he has to be able to plug in mindily to the phenomenon. He can plug into a human's mind. And through the mystery of mysteries, so can an adjuster that can bridge the gap between the highest of beings. Not even a solitary messenger is too high for an adjuster to plug in the other end and use that downstepping technique to deposit the paper within the mind of this individual that they hunted far and wide and found, this very select individual, as we'll refer to tonight, so that the midwayer can pull it out of that mind energy system and record it.
Fascinating.
The circuits, the universe circuits are literally conduits of mind energy as they go across the universe of universes. They literally lay down conduits of mind energy so minds can plug into that and extend consciousness across space.
What were you saying, Carmen?
I was just reflecting. I hadn't even considered the idea that the contact personality, the human contact personality that we've referred to, wasn't required for all of the material, that there are large sections that he wasn't needed for. That's pretty eye-opening.
If you look and, you know, they make a point in telling you for all these different beings whether or not they can directly engage a being down at the level of secondary midwayers.
Yeah.
You know, like a brilliant evening star, they tell you no problem directly interfacing with those low beings. You know, or a Melchizedek. You know, like for instance, a Melchizedek and a material son and daughter can directly engage each other. You know, or a Lenanadec and, you know, like the planetary prince, you know, hounding Adam and Eve. you know, so when a secondary Lenanadec authors a paper, they don't need the the contact personality. That secondary Lananda can directly engage the secondary midwares and get the paper to them. So, it's a reminder of just how exceptional this technique is. They did everything they could to avoid having to use it because of all the complication of it. There's nothing easy about it. But there's certain papers that no being, a lower being, could appropriately author that paper. You know, there's no low being that can directly engage a secondary midwayer who can say, I know of that which I speak about standing in the personal presence of the Universal Father. So they have to use this downstepping for those circumstances. No one knows adjusters better than solitary messengers. Yeah. So they have to author those papers.
It's thank you, Chris. A really good explanation, and I want to add two things here. And as we've said, we're not going to go into anecdotal, but in this case, I want to tell you something that the old timers, the people who were involved with this, had two things that they told people. And the one was, even if we told you everything we know about this process, you wouldn't understand because we don't understand it all either. So that's written down. That was, you know, them telling people who were always saying, you know, asking the old timers, hey, how'd this work? The other thing that they always said was, everything you need to know is in the book. And what you just helped us out there with, Chris, is the perfect example of what the old timers were talking about when they were getting, you know, tell us, you know. Well, it's in there, but you got to go dig it out. So thanks for digging, Chris.
Yeah, and you notice when you dig it out, you have to be very precise. You got to ask yourself questions like, well, what's the difference between interplanetary and universe communication? Things like that. You know, what are they referring to there?
Right.
You got to think about those details. And obviously, you know, that's the first comment you pointed out. Everything I said, does it explain the mystery of mysteries? No.
Right. Yep. It does not.
It does not. Okay. All right. On the other hand, you know, it's interesting to think about from the Revelator's perspective. They probably have a pretty good understanding of the mechanics of the normal interplanetary communication system, how that downstepping and all that sort of stuff works. So, you know, that just should add to, you know, when they say that what the adjuster is doing is a mystery of mysteries, okay, they mean, you know, the mechanics are very mysterious. How something like that could do what normally takes a vast, elaborate system, somehow that's all bottled up in that father fragment. All right, so I hope that didn't belabor the point too much.
That was wonderful. I was listening intently.
No, that was great.
And then you go back and listen again. And one of our friends in the chat room asked early on or made a comment regarding this process and inside a question. So what a harp of God does for us on the mansion worlds, an adjuster can do for the celestials on a planet in isolation when working on a project like putting the Urantia papers here for us?
Yeah. See, that bit about the quote-unquote harp of God, that Urantia contrivance, quote-unquote, right, it's initially your mind is too low to plug into things, so you need a bridging mechanism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And all of this discussion just underscores the principle of that we've run into so many times before, is that this is it's very literal. The Urantia book and the Revelation and the transactions described therein are literal. There's no magic. There's certainly mystery, but no something from nothing type activity.
I like that.
Yeah, and as we go into reading these two sections in paper 110 now tonight, a lot of what we're going to be reading is just going to be reminding us that what happened with the fifth epical revelation for those handful of revelators that needed this downstepping mechanism and these special circumstances, they're just that, very special circumstances. The run-of-the-mill human and the run-of-the-mill adjuster liaison is not even remotely viable for any such affairs.
Important to note.
Using me and my adjuster for this is completely impossible. I am remotely too hopeless to be used in this mode. I'm way too hopeless, not even remotely solid enough, high enough. My adjuster's not experienced enough, et cetera, as we're about to read. There's with a normal human being, so little solid relationship can be established between the adjuster and the mind. Forget about the subsequent awareness and interpretation and stuff of the human, but just to the literal energetic relationship between an adjuster's energy system and a human mindal energy system, it's almost impossible to get any sort of a definitive interface between the two that goes beyond the mere fact of the adjuster's presence and ability to make an embryonic soul.
And that's the purpose.
Yeah. Beyond step zero, it's very, very difficult. So it was a very difficult thing for them to find an individual, especially on our world, that they could use as a contact personality. You can imagine on some worlds it might be a lot easier to find such an individual.
You do have to wonder, I do, if they didn't, in that seeking, look in their looking temporarily, you know, get some trial runs with two or three others and went, no.
Right.
Well,
I bet they did. You know, and the human goes squirreling off on some tangent, and he's like, okay, that one's not going to work.
Another ism pops up.
Right, yeah. How many strange isms respond, you know, trying to find a contact personality?
That's what I'm
stable.
Oh, gosh. Inside jokes for you new listeners. That's one of the places where they talk about how adjusters are trying to communicate with us, and sometimes they flash something through very profound, and like Chris said, the human part goes squirrely and creates a new becomes a fanatic and creates a new ism. So.
As we'll see here in the fifth paragraph.
And we have a question here, but I want to... we're going to be answering that question to our friend in the chat room as we read these next two sections.
We should probably get into them here, and we'll people will see that a number of thoughts that they probably have are going to be addressed here.
Yes. All right. Well, getting into the beginning reading here, let me direct us in. We are going to paper 110 in section 4, which is on page 1207. And the title of this section is The Adjuster's Work in the Mind. Adjusters are able to receive the continuous stream of cosmic intelligence coming in over the master circuits of time and space. They are in full touch with the spirit intelligence and energy of the universes. But these mighty indwellers are unable to transmit very much of this wealth of wisdom and truth to the minds of their mortal subjects subjects because of the lack of commonness of nature and the absence of responsive recognition. Oh, there's a nice pair of words there, huh? Responsive recognition.
Yeah, so like I said, see, a lot of it is about how you can't do such things as the contact personality with any old human and their adjuster. But notice the one little key there. So if you have this self-acting adjuster of a reservist, they would be able, as they just said, these adjusters are aware of everything that's going on in terms of cosmic intelligence. They would be able to acquire, paper one, say, from the Divine Counselor, and then downstep it into the mind of the contact personality. So they're just reminding in that first paragraph that other end, is very straightforward for an adjuster to be aware of all of the spirit intelligence and energy of the universe.
The thought adjuster is engaged in a constant effort so to spiritualize your mind as to evolve your Maranja soul. But you yourself are mostly unconscious of this inner ministry. You are quite incapable of distinguishing the product of your own material intellect from that of the conjoint activities of your soul and the adjuster.
Well, I must say that should put us in our place right there.
Quite
incapable. Incapable, yes.
Yeah.
Did we say quite incapable? the one little thing there that won't be a subject immediately tonight, but it's often forgotten. Always remember when you're wanting to think precisely about what's going on that, as they're pointing out there, there's three different selves in play. So you have your material intellects, you have that self, your mortal self, your adjutant-minded self, but there's two other selves. There's that Maranja self seated on your soul, and there's the adjuster's self, mindal self. Both of those selves are potential inputs into the material intellect. So it not only could you potentially totally corrupt something that the adjuster feeds into your mind, but you could also corrupt something that your soul feeds into your mind.
I've not thought of that way, Chris.
Yeah, or to think about it, basically that soul is a Maranja copy of your higher personalized self. So if you, another way to think about that interaction is the upper domain of your hourglass, your spiritualized mind, your personalized self, trying to help out the not yet personalized self, the animal origin self. It tries to bring some wisdom down to it, and the incessant clamoring of that lower animal origin self just takes it off in crazy directions, without even a pause of consideration. That's also in play.
Yeah, I see what you're saying now. Wow.
By and large, we're going to be talking about usually you can kind of think of the adjuster and the soul as pretty much being on the same page. So, they kind of speak with one voice. But technically there are two voices there that are attempting to inject guidance into the incessant clamoring of inescapable self.
Until fusion.
Right. Yep.
But that's a little ways off.
Little ways.
And obviously, getting to the next life can help get rid of the animal origin, adjutant mind self. And then you just have, it's just working between the soul self and the adjuster then. So that reminds you, they aren't the same. There is a differential there. if there wasn't a differential, that individual would have fused. So.
Right.
Certain abrupt presentations of thoughts, conclusions, and other pictures of mind are sometimes the direct or indirect work of the adjuster, but far more often they are the sudden emergence into consciousness of ideas which have been grouping themselves together in the submerged mental levels, natural and everyday occurrences of normal and ordinary psychic function, inherent in the circuits of the evolving animal mind. In contrast with these subconscious emanations, the revelations of the adjuster appear through the realms of the superconscious. Now, this is pretty interesting here because back in the era when this book was coming through, there was very little spoken of about the superconscious. We had, the classic Freud with the subconscious and the conscious, but this other factor about the superconscious was, you can find it in religious traditions, but it was not.
Or psychology. It was there.
Right.
Some of the psychologists, too.
Yes.
But, yeah, definitely, they decide to, it's like, well, that's a pretty good way to model it. They decide, so they decided to run with that. They're going to say the beginning of the next paragraph, think of your consciousness as being a very definitive level. Basically a two-dimensional plane that your consciousness resides in. It's a very narrow, vertically level. And then there's a subconscious below that and a superconscious above that. And because that consciousness is this very thin layer, like I was saying, the adjusters couldn't be entering the superconscious domain at any higher level. They are definitely touching it at the highest regions. So there's this big gap between that little thin flatland that we live in consciously and where the adjusters plugging in above.
Trust all matters of mind beyond the dead level of consciousness to the custody of the adjusters. In due time, if not in this world, then on the mansion worlds, they will give good account of their stewardship, and eventually will they bring forth those meanings and values entrusted to their care and keeping. They will resurrect every worthy treasure of the mortal mind if you survive. Another little reminder here that they're recording. They're doing this for our soul, mostly for the next world, because we have so much trouble with interpreting it, gathering it, and using it in this life. Like you say, Chris, with the material intellect just going bonkers all over the place.
Mm-hmm. They're almost. It's almost like they're sort of telling us to not even really try very hard to distinguish between things like superconscious, subconscious. They tell us that we're quite incapable of distinguishing these, and then that these subconscious emanations they're pretty normal and natural for a human being of animal origin. So they're almost trying to get us to not delve into stuff where we're going to get confused and wrapped around the axle, as one of our co-hosts likes to remind us.
Right. Well,
that's true, Kermit. But I'm looking at my regular book here. It's open to 1207 where I'm reading, but. Right across on the facing page of 1206 in the middle of the paragraph, it says, the great goal of human existence is to attune to the divinity of the indwelling adjuster. The great achievement of mortal life is the attainment of a true and understanding consecration to the eternal aims of the divine spirit who waits and works within your mind. And there are other places where it encourages us, to try and connect So there's, we kind of have to sift through. I hear what you're saying, Kermit.
How do you resolve the tension between those two? That, if you just think about, you know, what they just pointed out there, the point is to supply the favorable conditions so that spirit gravity slowly but surely lifts that thin layer of your consciousness, that level of your consciousness. Spirit gravity lifts that up until you're looking eye to eye to the adjuster. What they're warning against, and they will, you know, ever more so as we read on here, is attempting to somehow get ahead of yourself and reach up beyond your elastic limit to try to interface with an adjuster way up there. You may get lost. You may break yourself. There's all kinds of problems with that. Not to mention, even if you manage to do it without doing any serious damage to your mind, it's extremely unlikely that you can bring anything down from that high a height and have it maintain a logical form.
Yeah, right.
Down the level where you live. You're just going to, no matter how much you don't want to twist it, you'll just twist it all up. So it's just...
Because we live on a dark and ignorant planet?
That just makes it worse. I mean, we're animal origin. We're not divine origin. So there's this vast gulf, and it's just fraught with technical issues. You can be perfectly sincere and everything, but they're just trying to remind you, like Kermit just said, this is all literal and energetic and scientific. I mean, there's just some laws that are not changed by wishful thinking.
Yeah.
And the big one here is material gravity is keeping your stable level down low, and spirit gravity is keeping the adjuster up high. If we didn't have a material mind, that wouldn't be such a definitive bifurcation. But in this life, perforce, you serve two masters.
Right.
Material gravity and spirit gravity.
True, but we have the personality circuit to
weave
them together.
All these things that can help. I'm just trying to point out that's why they, both of those things that are true, that you brought up, James, in contrast to what was being said there. It's just, they're both true. It's just, recognize the technical issue. You can't expect, a solid input to be the norm. Yes, it can be the rare exception. We can always even grab a hold of our bootstraps and achieve a supreme decision in this life. If you actually consecrate your mind in even the minutest of supreme ways, that has a direct linkage to the adjuster, because that's the eye level of the adjuster, that supreme level. So it is possible. Just, again, they're just trying to say people don't expect it as the norm. It's not even remotely the norm on a normal world for there to be much linkage here of any state of quality.
And look at, they invoke the faith element here when they're saying to trust all matters of mind beyond the dead level of consciousness. We're to truly take all this to heart and not worry about being too confused.
I mean, obviously one of the reasons why someone might want to journey is because they want to cause growth. Man cannot cause growth.
Right.
Okay. Even if you're successful in a journey upward a little bit, you will still cause no growth. Man cannot cause growth. Only the God of evolution is going to give you rewards for your evolutionary successes. You know, and a fiat upreach is not an evolutionary success. So that they're just trying to remind you that. And again, you know, saying that, using that expression, you know, that it's a dead level of consciousness. I mean, like I said, I mean, it's a very precise, thin level. We do not have any vast vertical expanse of consciousness as the lowly being that we are. But like we mentioned, I mentioned at the beginning, you take someone like a mighty messenger, or you as a finaliter eventually, now there's a being who has a vast vertical mind, much greater vertically than a divine counselor, say. A divine counselor is, you know, is very much localized vertically. You know, they say that relative to, say, a universal sensor, a divine counselor, his mind reaches vertically down closer to us than a universal sensor does. But a finaliter or a mighty messenger, their mind goes all the way from the Andan Infanta level, you know, initial will creature level, all the way up to paradise. You know, one day we'll have that kind of mind that will span that vast vertical stretch. But right now it's a thin little flatlander sheet of mind where we really dwell in our consciousness. And any thoughts otherwise are delusional. False exaltation, false verticalization, that's what delusion means. You know, believing that you have that you're thicker vertically than you actually are.
Before we leave this paragraph, we do have a question. James, I see you responded, I think. Yeah. But just we've discussed this many times. It's that last three words, if you survive. And one of our regular listeners, how do you interpret this, if you survive? It seems like I've heard comments from the group that seem to believe almost in a universal survival.
Well,
I have right. And he goes on from there. He's got some issues with that. So,
right. The only change from before Pentecost to now in interpreting those three words, if you survive, you know, prior to the universal bestowal of thought adjusters, for many, many humans on the planet, there would have been this issue of, you know, that immediate issue of survival, surviving the mortal life. Even though Michael changed that 2,000 years ago and took that issue of surviving the mortal life, you know, basically out of play unless you really, really work at it.
Yeah.
There are those that
appear to be really, really working at that.
Right, but you know, just forget about them. Set that aside. I mean, that's not what they're speaking to. When they say if you survive, they're not trying to say, you know, unless you choose iniquity, you know, in this life.
Uh-huh.
What they're pointing out is just because you make it to the next life on the first mansion world doesn't mean you make it to eternity. You haven't fused with your adjuster yet.
Right.
And somewhere between, you know, the first mansion world and fusing with your adjuster, you could take a sharp right turn. You know, and then go sideways for a ways and then turn straight down. And, you know, push down on the stick and plow your plane right into the ground. So when there's, all you have to do is just take the mansion worlds into account when you think about those sentences now about survival. Instead of trying to rationalize them all on this world, in this life,
mm-hmm.
just extend it to the mansion worlds, which are just an extension of this, of the mortal worlds. If you survive, that initial phase where you're trying to overcome your animal inertia, you're trying to overcome material gravity pulling you down.
Okay. Yeah, we've discussed this at great length, and I was trying to remember which broadcast, and maybe that'll come back to mind. But bottom line is, it is a world of great mercy. There's an accounting of it. You know, mercy is extended greatly on these isolated spheres like ours. That's the way I always look at it.
Yeah, unless you've wholeheartedly consecrated yourself to oblivion, there's nothing to fear. But there is a huge challenge in front of you. Just throw away the fear, but recognize there's nothing automatic about survival. You have to wholeheartedly consecrate yourself to eternity. So you have to work through every nook and cranny of this chaotic mindal energy system that you start with, and master it, get it aligned towards eternity. There's nothing
all the fear and doubt
about it.
All the fear and doubt.
You're not.
You know, I think the main thing is every time this subject comes up, it's always it seems to be an outward thing, like who's going to survive or how many, and really it's a pointless kind of discussion or roundabout. The only real thing that matters is concerning your own survival. Like say, Chris, you make that consecration to survive, and that's it. Whether others survive is nobody else's business. We don't know. Only the gods know.
Right. The reason there's absolutely no place for fear in that contemplation is that absolutely everything of survival value survives.
Yep, that's what they just told us.
I mean, the only thing that doesn't survive is that which isn't real. So just ask yourself a simple question. Do you think you're real, even minutely? Well, then you're fine. Just work on making yourself bigger. But there was a lot of the old theologies say that the only people who survive are those who reach a certain size. Anything
right.
Smaller than 5 inches in diameter doesn't make it. and then you're supposed to be fearful that you're only 4 7/8. Michael, eliminated that.
And regarding my survival and those that I find very precious, my loved ones and my dearest ones, trust, just simply move in that place of trust. That's where I came to years ago, because there are those in my life that at several points, especially before we began these series of discussions, every once in a while I'd feel that fear creeping in. Well, what if he isn't, and Kermit, you've talked about that. You have some dear friends you've wondered about, but you've let it go. You trust now.
You know, between the two things that the authors of this revelation tell us, they go to great length throughout the book to explain in many ways what it takes to not survive. That is the degree of consecration, awareness, and so forth that it takes to not survive. That and also the promise of perfection attainment and the absolute dimension of our personality, which puts our survival in our hands. Those two things should go a long way to assuage fear of these kinds. But this fear is a very deeply seated cultural thing in Christian society, and not just Christian society, but the fear of not surviving is very, very large in our culture.
You know, and just whenever you experience, especially that sort of existential fear, don't be hard on yourself, but just gently remind yourself that faith, that fear is at a very low level. And, you know, if you're seeing that fear, that means that's the eye level of your faith. Take your faith up a notch where it sees over the top of fear.
Wonderful image.
Make that faith a living faith, a trust.
Right.
You know, just use it as a gentle reminder. Oh, I could fix that fear. I could take my faith up a notch. And then it wouldn't be at the eye level of fear anymore.
Get on the ladder. Take some steps.
All right.
There exists a vast gulf between the human and the divine, between man and God. Urantia races are so largely electrically and chemically controlled, so highly animal-like in their common behavior, so emotional in their ordinary reactions, that it becomes exceedingly difficult for the monitors to guide and direct them. You are so devoid of courageous decisions and consecrated cooperation that your indwelling adjusters find it next to impossible to communicate directly with the human mind. Even when they do find it possible to flash a gleam of new truth to the evolving mortal soul, this spiritual revelation often so blinds the creature as to precipitate a convulsion of fanaticism or to initiate some other intellectual upheaval which results disastrously. Many a new religion and strange ism has arisen from the aborted, imperfect, misunderstood, and garbled communications of the thought adjusters. Well, we got smack down there.
We would call those rugged truths.
Yeah,
I know. I feel sufficiently smacked here.
I mean,
animal-like.
You know, in one passing line, you know, I mean, they just, you know, brush aside most of what people think the whole point of religion is. So emotional in their ordinary reactions.
Yeah.
Yeah. In other words, you're trying to, you know, achieve what you desire on the second level of meaning, on the level of the feelings, you know, and declaring that to be the height of spiritual nature. And, you know, and they're saying, no, if that's what you're doing, if you're trying to put the level of the feelings on steroids and call it religion, you can be guaranteed that you have no relationship to your adjuster.
good one.
You know,
yeah.
The adjuster is just going, oh, boy, okay.
Yeah, I think I'll take a rest here. Check out for a while because my subject is devoid of courageous decisions and consecrated cooperation.
You know, luckily, they're connected to all the universe broadcasts, you know, so there's always a good book to read while they're waiting for you to do something.
They pull their universal Kindle out. Is that what you're saying, Chris?
Yes, exactly.
Oh, man. Well, we got to laugh, you know. I mean, this is all true. You know, it's very, very helpful for the humility factor, these smackdowns.
It really is, James. Oh. It really is.
Oh, my.
Yeah,
got so far to go.
In a sense, they're letting us down easy.
Oh,
you know.
Go ahead, Kermit. Go ahead.
Well, no, I was just saying, in a sense, these kinds of things are letting us off easy. It's like, oh, okay, they know how bad off we are, so we're not going to get judged on that one. Well, you know, they already know this, so don't try and hide it, and don't feel ashamed because it's right there in front of you and them, so move on.
Yeah, like I said, don't beat yourself up when you experience fear. That's not held against you. That's a given. Just use it as a little reminder to you need to take a couple of steps up the ladder. And just, you know, remember just how disastrously this can result. You know, as they say, you know, not only is there this, you know, the fanaticism directly from just too much spiritual energy carrying you off, idealistically and whatnot, but also remember that the adjuster is just as much pure energy as it is pure spirit. So if you actually achieve a closeness, it's going to burn out your circuitry. So the disastrously can be very material, too. I mean, it can literally fry your mind and your brain, you know, at the same time to a degree. You know, if this contact is too intimate. So
we know it's happened. Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Sure.
It'll vegetableize a person if they get too close.
No danger here, I'm afraid.
Ditto.
For many thousands of years, so the records of Jerusalem show, in each generation there have lived fewer and fewer beings who could function safely with self-acting adjusters. This is an alarming picture, and the supervising personalities of Satania look with favor upon the proposals of some of your more immediate planetary supervisors who advocate the inauguration of measures designed to foster and conserve the higher spiritual types of the Urantia races. Now, there's a provocative paragraph. What are we going to do with that, guys?
Is that celestial eugenics? Is that what they're talking about?
Yeah, a little bit of higher level eugenics going on there. You know, and just, of course, you know, to the immediacy of what we're talking about with the contact personality and the destiny reservists, you know, you can see that's one of the things that would be of concern.
Right.
You know, I mean, to be a reservist, you have to be able to handle a self-acting adjuster. So fewer, you know, that means there's fewer and fewer people that are a potential pool for reservists, or someone that they could use to bridge this communication difficulty, or, you know, anything like that. So, you know, that's the immediate concern to what we're talking about here with getting the fifth epical revelation to us.
Right.
Well, there's a companion quote here that I have to bring in. I think it's so relevant to what they're talking about. There's another place in the book where they talk about the technique for doing what they're talking about. Possibly. Anyway, I'm gonna toss it in. You guys tell me what you think. It's from back in paper 52. Planetary Mortal Epics, and it's in the section of section 6, Urantia's post-bestowal age. It's got a list of all kinds of wonderful things that are happening on a planet that's really moving along.
Page number
is 598 of paper 52, section 6, page 598, and section number 5 is called Spiritual Insight. The brotherhood of man is, after all, predicated on the recognition of the fatherhood of God. The quickest way to realize the brotherhood of man on Urantia is to effect the spiritual transformation of present-day humanity. The only technique for accelerating the natural trend of social evolution is that of applying spiritual pressure from above, thus augmenting moral insight while enhancing the soul capacity of every mortal to understand and love every other mortal. Mutual understanding and fraternal love are transcendent civilizers and mighty factors in the worldwide realization of the brotherhood of man. So we've got this another little very interesting phrase here, applying spiritual pressure from above, but you know, they're talking about moral insight, and that's the thought adjuster. That's the realm of the thought adjuster. They arrive on the first moral decision-making, and enhancing the soul capacity, they're the ones that are working in your soul. I've got to think that these two are related. What do you guys think?
Well, yeah, I mean, they're reminding us that, you know, if we would supply the favorable conditions, the accelerating agents of the spirit of truth and the thought adjuster relative to the foundation of the Holy Spirit, you know, could really help in moving us forward. You know, those are definite spiritual pressures. You know, it's just, of course, it's all contingent upon you not putting a pressure plate on the top of your mind, you know, so that those pressures have no impact on you. But certainly that's what Michael did, you know, with the universal bestowal of thought adjusters and the spirit of truth. As instead of just having this the Holy Spirit ministry as a spiritual pressure from above, you know, he augmented that spiritual pressure for those who would get out of the way and allow it to do something. You know, we've had 2,000 years of that potential. We aren't exactly swimming in the brotherhood of man right now.
Yeah.
No. Do tell.
Yeah,
that's kind of an alarming picture, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, so, yeah, and they're just pointing out in that one we just read in paper 110, I mean, you know, you not only have the free will issue of these potentials being blocked, but then on top of it, you have such a Swiss cheese biologic foundation on the planet that, you know, it's getting harder and harder to seat higher mind on such a limited, non-biologically uplifted foundation. So,
which points to that immediate planetary supervisors who advocate inauguration of measures designed to foster and conserve the higher spiritual types. You wonder what those are.
You just don't want to let all of that Adamic blood get completely diffused. You know, you just won't have high enough mind, you know, anywhere on the planet for anything to happen.
Yeah.
Well, at least it's an optimistic note there. You know,
there's something to conserve.
Yeah.
Something to work with, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, gosh, we need a little bit of that that bump, you know. Well, I hope that since these papers were indicted and presented, that they have gone ahead and done that.
Yeah, that there's a celestial conservation corps in, you know, working behind the scenes.
Yeah, well, we know that they are, but no, we've got to be patient and let the supreme unfold as it should and will. Well, so that's the end of section 4, and I'm thinking that we haven't had our friend Kermit read for a while. Because I've been reading and we've been discussing so much on these papers. Sorry, don't mean to hog the show. What do you think? What do you think, Kermit? You feel like reading the next section? We're going to move into section 5 here.
Well, I think
it's
okay with
too slighted.
If it's okay with Ann.
I'm just mighty fine.
Okay.
Yeah, actually, I might have just gotten that from Anne. That's what she was interested in. Did I get that message, Anne?
Was that little prompt? Yeah, that wasn't the adjuster. That was just the text. Yes.
Okay. Well, here we go. Section 5: Erroneous concepts of adjuster guidance. Do not confuse and confound the mission and influence of the adjuster with what is commonly called conscience. They are not directly related. Conscience is a human and purely psychic reaction. It is not to be despised, but it is hardly the voice of God to the soul, which indeed the adjusters would be if such a voice could be heard. Conscience rightly admonishes you to do right. But the adjuster, in addition, endeavors to tell you what truly is right, that is, when and as you are able to perceive the monitor's leading.
Just one little quick thing of reflection, besides as they're bringing up the contrast between conscience and some voice from above, as it were. You notice how it speaks of the adjuster, speaking to the soul. You know, that's how they refer to it, the voice of God to the soul, which indeed the adjuster would be, you know, if such a voice could be heard. Whereas the conscience, you know, you can think of as speaking to that animal origin mind. So
right.
The adjuster is speaking to the soul, that is, you know, literally the soul, and also that higher mind, that spiritualized mind. But there's that animal origin, adjutant mind, not yet personalized, not yet spiritualized, very material mind with its incessant clamoring and all of its innate urges, you know, and tendencies that conscience is trying to speak to. So you can kind of think of conscience as being, see, a little bit of that upper domain of the hourglass trying to talk to the lower, and it's rooted in your third adjutant down there in the adjutant mind. Just notice again that contrast that, you know, we were talking about with the, if you start to really think in terms of three selves and a communication between three points in this mindal energy system.
You know, this this also speaks to sort of obtusely to that evasive thing we've talked about before of soul consciousness. So it would appear that the degree to which we can experience soul consciousness, we might also be able to experience hearing the voice of God, because they're on a plane.
Common level, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In the Jester papers here, they do occasionally speak to that issue of how there can begin to be some more direct back and forth relationship between the Marantia mind that seated on the soul and your more immediate conscious mind.
Yeah.
And then the adjuster chiming into that. Obviously, as you're getting up there in the higher psychic circles, this would come into play.
Right. Man's dream experiences, that disordered and disconnected parade of the uncoordinated sleeping mind, present adequate proof of the failure of the adjusters to harmonize and associate the divergent factors of the mind of man. The adjusters simply cannot, in a single lifetime, arbitrarily coordinate and synchronize two such unlike and diverse types of thinking as the human and the divine. When they do, as they sometimes have, such souls are translated directly to the mansion worlds without the necessity of passing through the experience of death. Well, that surprises me. Like when you synchronize, I mean, obviously they're talking about a more permanent arrangement, this synchronization that results in fusion. I mean, I would think you could have experiences of synchronizing with the adjuster's mind to some limited degree or partial limited degree to that would not result in you fusing, but would be sort of a religious experience, I suppose.
Well, that's why there's two words, arbitrarily coordinate and synchronize. Okay, that the coordination is going on as you go from seventh circular to first circular. You're becoming more and more a mind that's consecrated to the universal harmony of God the Mother. You see the word coordinate. Remember, those are cosmic levels. You become a first circular, and then there's that final step of synchronization. As a first circular, you still have to synchronize with the adjuster before you fuse. So that's why those two things are there. See, so you're kind of mixing the words. You know,
yeah.
There can be degrees of coordination, but technically, you know, that last step of synchronizing, you know, where you literally think of you. You've made it to the first circle, so you're this circle that's wrapped tightly around the cylindrical rod of the adjuster that's inserted from above into your mind, and then you're rotating that circle around that rod, trying to find the place where it locks on, trying to synchronize with it.
And so that's more of a permanent movement,
right?
Then
yeah. See, that's when you're really trying to engage eternity directly, you know, in a sense. See, so it's permanent is the word.
Yeah.
And just the little litmus test here. If you still are having any sort of a complicated, bizarre, tangential dream life, don't expect to be fusing anytime soon.
Okay.
Notice the little subtext there.
Yes. It's telling you the degree to which you have garbled dreams is the degree to which you're not going anywhere for a while.
Right, that just means the cosmic level you're on is way down there near the garbler. You've got to lift that level way up yet.
Okay, no.
The garbler
won't be leaving anytime soon. During the slumber season, the adjuster attempts to achieve only that which the will of the indwelt personality has previously fully approved by the decisions and choosings which were made during times of fully wakeful consciousness and which have thereby become lodged in the realms of the supermind, the liaison domain of human and divine interrelationship.
Just two quick things there. See, they're reminding you of what I said when I read that paragraph up front. You know, what do they mean by liaison? See?
Yeah.
It's the liaison of the adjuster with the mind, the human mind. And just prior, I think it's maybe in section two of this paper, they gave you what they're referring to there, that the adjuster is always subservient to your will. See, so even when you're talking about what it might do during a time when your mind, the garbler is on low instead of high, it still is not going to be able to do anything if there hasn't been a very precise, clear, willing prior.
You can't back into this stuff.
Right. It can't do anything unless you've supplied the favorable conditions.
Yeah.
And we're reminded there are times there can be those dream states that you wake up and you have this clarity. You're not sure, you know, you're working on a project or something, and we're just warned.
It probably just means you didn't drift down as close to the garbler. You stayed up a little higher while you were sleeping.
That's a good point, Ann, because elsewhere they're telling us that in dream life have been many important things are communicated in dream life of a pretty high nature. You know, Joseph and Zacharias having dreams and being having things confirmed for them. So there's something going on there.
Right. It's just, you know, they know we're thinking this right now, and so that's why they're going to say what they say next.
Yeah.
They get out the hammer and the anvil and pound us a little bit more because we're all thinking, oh my goodness, I could be the next Joseph.
Chris, I just said I wake up occasionally with a little bit of clarity. I didn't. I have fun sometimes with those dreams. Now I go, now why? Why did he show up in my dream? You know, and we had fun. I learned something.
You know, those favorable conditions you're speaking of there, Chris, we should probably tell people that just prior to this, the section that I read, section four, at the end of section three of this paper, just, you know, one page back, are, you know, this beautiful little four list of how you can consciously augment, adjust, or harmony, set of 4 points there. So I want to direct our listeners or anybody else into those, that little list there, to keep that in mind in contrast to what we're reading here about dreams and fanatic isms and all that. They do tell us quite clearly how you can augment, adjust, or harmony.
Something a little bottom less delusional.
Bottom of 1206 for all of you out there. Thanks.
Yep, the end of section three. And it is the first paragraph of the end of the first paragraph of section two of paper 110 that has that, they are always subservient to your will. So I was remembering that correctly.
Right. Yep. And it's in italics, by the way, as
it
you
is.
Probably just noticed.
Great. While their mortal hosts are asleep, the adjusters try to register their creations in the higher levels of the material mind, and some of your grotesque dreams indicate their failure to make efficient contact. The absurdities of dream life not only testify to pressure of unexpressed emotions, but also bear witness to the horrible distortion of the representations of the spiritual concepts presented by the adjusters. Your own passions, urges, and other innate tendencies translate themselves into the picture and substitute their unexpressed desires for the divine messages which the indwellers are endeavoring to put into the psychic records during unconscious sleep.
So this, you know, to the immediate subject of hand of the contact personalities, they're, you know, between the lines here, they're reminding you of, they've got to find someone where this isn't the case. You know, this is the normal problem with any, even when, you know, in a genuine auto-revelatory situation, this is the big problem. So they've got to go beyond, you know, not only the normal human situation, but even beyond the normal auto-revelatory situation and try to find someone who can, you know, can totally back off and let their mind energy system go placid so that the adjuster can put a form in that mindal energy system and have material gravity pull it down to where the secondary midwayer can take a hold of it, you know, and not have any cross currents messing up that form, that in that, you know, it's a literal shape in the mindal energy system that the secondary midwayer is trying to take a hold of. And if it's dimpled or anything in the slightest, the fifth epical revelation is not going to be valid.
Well, that would seem to be a very touchy process, and one of the greatest vulnerabilities in this whole process is this particular juncture, this particular transaction point.
You can see why they, you know, as much as they could, they had authors that didn't, where this wasn't necessary, authors that could just directly engage the secondary midwayers, because this is a tricky process.
It is extremely dangerous to postulate as to the adjuster content of the dream life. The adjusters do work during sleep, but your ordinary dream experiences are purely physiologic and psychologic phenomena. Likewise, it is hazardous to attempt the differentiation of the adjuster's concept registry from the more or less continuous and conscious reception of the dictations of mortal conscience. These are problems which will have to be solved through individual discrimination and personal decision. But a human being would do better to err in rejecting an adjuster's expression through believing it to be a purely human experience than to blunder into exalting a reaction of the mortal mind to the sphere of divine dignity. Remember, the influence of a thought adjuster is for the most part, though not wholly, a superconscious experience.
Yeah, they're really wanting to stress this, and it's very important. Very important.
Yeah, I mean, just one thing to throw in there that you also know from the revelation, The work is important. The self is not.
Not.
Okay, so you know, that's why what they said is true. You know, going, I mean, really? It's better that I reject the word of God put in my mind? Yes, because the self is not important. You know, you're thinking, well, if God is speaking to me, this is all important. I'm obviously the savior of the planet. No, the self is not important. So they're saying, I mean, by, you know, it's better to assume that that nothing's happening than to make the mistake of taking one of your mindful burps and turning it into the voice of God.
A garbler.
And even, yeah, and even more important, the self not being more important. More to the point, the self not being important here with regard to the human subject that we've been talking about.
Yes.
Truly not. It's not for his edification or elevation or ascension. It's for the, it's a greater calling.
Yeah, and you know, just not only is it not for his edification, someone who's chosen as a contact personality, you know, it's, it's practically a suicide mission. You can't do this with a lowly human and not have it have consequences on the health. Remember when they were talking about the self-acting adjusters and the alarming picture? You know, you could function safely with a self-acting adjuster. Even in the best of circumstances, it's you know, this is putting a great strain on the physiology and the psychology of the human being contacted. It's going to wear them out. You know, the normal bending of your wire that gets you through 80 years of life before you die, when they're engaging your mind like this, they're bending that wire very rapidly. And that wire is going to snap.
So they're using up your longevity.
In most cases, but as we're going to read ahead here, that wasn't the case with this particular unique and amazing subject.
Well, of course, we don't know if he lived to be a ripe old age of 80 or if he died at 45.
No, we don't, but they do tell us.
That's all I'm pointing out.
That he,
he was okay when we got him.
Well, here at the end of this this section, they give us a nice health report.
I don't want to just bring in the fear element here, you know, but just, you know, again, it's a literal thing. You're using a mechanical system more. When you, the more you drive your car, the sooner it wears out. That's just a fact. It's a literal material energy system we're talking about here. It obeys physical laws. So they're using it more than it's normally used in a human lifetime, so it's not going to last as long.
I don't know if I'm going with that mechanical allegory there, Chris. I'm just not sure I can get on with that. This is all taking place in the superconscious and on spirit circuits, which don't wear down.
That's true. The higher it functions, the better. But see, that's my only statement. The problem is trying to keep it high enough. If it starts to trickle down a little bit, you know, if there's a little leakage, it's going to have a health impact.
I'm with you on that. Yes.
See, that's all they're worried about here.
Yep.
In varying degrees and increasingly, as you ascend the psychic circles, sometimes directly but more often indirectly, you do communicate with your adjusters. But it is dangerous to entertain the idea that every new concept originating in the human mind is the dictation of the adjuster. More often, in beings of your order, that which you accept as the adjuster's voice is in reality the emanation of your own intellect. This is dangerous ground, and every human being must settle these problems for himself in accordance with his natural human wisdom and superhuman insight. It's the second time they've told us that we have to settle these issues by ourselves.
Yeah, and it's sad to record that so few persons on your ranch have natural human wisdom and superhuman insight. see, so again, that's what I'm saying.
Yep.
You guys need to be very careful about this. Danger, danger.
Danger. You know, they got the solitary messenger is writing this.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. And the solitary messenger also wrote the last paper, and we got to bring this in just for contrast and to try and figure out what they're telling us here. And in paper 109, section 5, we're going to go back just a few pages to 1199. In the second paragraph of section 5, it is sometimes possible to have the mind illuminated, to hear the divine voice that continually speaks within you, so that you may become partially conscious of the wisdom, truth, goodness, and beauty of the potential personality constantly indwelling you. That's beautiful. It's beautiful. Now, there's the follow-up sentence kind of goes over the other way. Here, I'm going to go for it. But your unsteady and rapidly shifting mental attitudes often result in thwarting the plans and interrupting the work of the adjusters. The work is not only interfered with by the innate natures of the mortal races, but this ministry is also greatly retarded by, okay, let's say it all together, symmetry of soul, your own preconceived opinions,
settled ideas,
and long-standing
prejudices.
Yeah, that's kind of our mantra. Because of these handicaps, many times only their unfinished creations emerge into consciousness, and confusion of concept is inevitable. Therefore, in scrutinizing mental situations, safety lies only in the prompt recognition of each and every thought and experience for just what it actually and fundamentally is, disregarding entirely what it might have been. So those two are, I mean, they kind of like almost fit in this section we're reading here now. But they keep inspiring us to try and get connected with that adjuster and then saying, whoa, boy, whoa, slow down.
Yeah, it's we're trying to say things right together. Yes, we can't do it because of the delay.
Sorry on that.
It's okay, but it made me think. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah.
Synchronize like this. I mean, how well can we synchronize with our adjusters?
That's what I meant. That's what was running through my mind. No wonder we have so much problem.
Yeah, you know, and certainly if once a human gets up to third circular, you know, these sorts of more stable linkages are possible. But, you know, until that, you haven't broken free, by and large, from the inertial of your animal mind. So you just have to keep all this, it's all relative. There's all this magnificent potential, but just don't try to cram it all into this life.
Yeah, right. We've got enough time.
I mean, all these wonderful things will happen quite naturally in the next, you know, 2-3 lives. Don't try to cram it all in this life.
And you see how they're calling us. They're really calling us to an objective consciousness as opposed to the subjective, self-centered consciousness that we all have. Everything seems to point to get out of your own way.
Yeah. More often in beings of your order, that which you can accept as the adjuster's voice is in reality the emanation of your own intellect. i.e., that which you accept as righteousness is actually self-righteousness.
Oh.
Ouch.
Danger, danger.
That's why it's dangerous.
You're killing me, Chris.
It's just
killing me.
Be patient. That's why we have Imagine Worlds, a whole universe career.
Yep. Well, you know, we've got this next paragraph, the last paragraph, is really the kind of the guts of this thing as far as what we're moving into. So I'm going to read it, but we're going to have to do some review next week, I'm thinking. What do you guys think?
Oh, well,
it'll be appropriate.
it all fits into the, you know, into the next thing about the reservists. So,
yep.
The adjuster of the human being through whom this communication is being made enjoys such a wide scope of activity chiefly because of this human's almost complete indifference to any outward manifestations of the adjuster's inner presence. It is indeed fortunate that he remains consciously quite unconcerned about the entire procedure. He holds one of the highly experienced adjusters of his day and generation, and yet his passive reaction to and inactive concern toward the phenomena associated with the presence in his mind of this versatile adjuster is pronounced by the guardian of destiny to be a rare and fortuitous reaction. And all this constitutes a favorable coordination of influences, favorable both to the adjuster in the higher sphere of action and to the human partner from the standpoints of health, efficiency, and tranquility.
Yep. So the two big things there are, and notice first, the adjuster of the human being through whom this communication is being made. I see this paper written by solitary messenger, so they have to be using the contact personality to get it to the secondary midware.
Right.
Okay. And then the other thing is what we were just talking extensively about. If there's even a little bit of active concern towards what's going on, you know, if the human involved, engages it even slightly, what that does is going to bring these high energy things down lower, and this is going to, be problematic for health, efficiency, and tranquility. It needs to stay up very high, not only to keep the conduit clean for getting the paper downloaded, but for the sake, literally the physical health of the contact personality. If he trickles any of that down a little bit, it's going to just start really burning him out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we've got a little under 3 minutes left, gang.
Got
some thoughts? You guys want to toss around a little bit about this paragraph?
Well, I'm trying to go back to that question that was asked about, this person is actually asking, do you think having this experienced adjuster made him, her, more intelligent or capable? More intelligent?
Well, specifics, I'm sure vary. But, notice the almost complete indifference to any outward manifestations of the adjuster's inner presence. They're reminding you that this is going to affect, how this human is manifesting himself in his life. This is going to have outward consequences. It's not all going to stay hidden. What those are, they're not being specific, but just, notice that it has to be more than just him being passive during the process when he's in a sleep-like state. He has to stay very neutral relative to all the things that are going to be manifesting as well. Because if he isn't, it's going to mess things up inside, and it's going to damage him and damage the process. And
well, you're answering that question back earlier when I said it'll come in later about what other things about this person, and you're stating them right there.
Mm-hmm.
Very unusual situation.
Right. He very well could have had a number of other things that were manifesting besides this particular issue of, involved directly with contact times. We don't know.
In that time frame. Well, we're down.
You got 30
seconds. We're under a minute. Under a minute, gang. Back 30 seconds.
Under 1 minute. Well, another really informative show, informing me, I can say at least. Enjoyed it a lot. Thanks, guys. Thanks, everybody
yes,
out
indeed.
There.
Thank you.
And,
thanks. And as I go to sleep tonight, I will request that the garbler factor be minimized.
Keep looking
yeah, me
up.
Me too, Ann.
Looking up. Okay.
99, everyone.
Good night. God bless. Bye.
Good
for
night. God.
Yep. Bye.
God bless everybody.